Take your time in setting up. Our next case is number 18-11761, Kendall Hotel and Suites LLC et al. Versus Sunit Kapila.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Hold on 1 second. Let them get their stuff together and get ready. Okay, Mr. Broker, whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. I'm Doug Broker, Sweet Apple Broker in Varkas. Welcome back to Miami. This is a very important case in terms of how bankruptcy is practiced, and it deals with failures to disclose at the inception of the case that infected the proceedings and caused the record to be unreliable, and as a result, we're seeking vacator. Essentially, the case started as a voluntary Chapter 11, and counsel came in for one of the main creditors, and there was a motion to disqualify that was brought against that firm because the debtors had, landowning affiliates of the debtors and the principal of the debtor had, and allegedly the debtor had communicated with a senior partner in the firm about representing them a year before. And neither the attorneys for the firm nor the court disclosed that there were some close working relationships.
I think we understand the nature of the conflict that you're alleging. I think your burden here is to help us understand why it is that your appeal of orders was timely.
Okay, very good. I appreciate you focusing, and we can skip over the facts that I'm sure you know extremely well. So there's been issues in other cases where this court has made it very clear by dismissing appeals, and in this case, that issues of recusal cannot reach the 11th Circuit until after a final order. And I recognize that that creates some difficulty, and I appreciate the court taking this case on so that we can try and sort through it. Because on the one hand, you have a principle of finality, and generally, as a number of the cases that have been cited, you need to appeal orders within 15 days.
I think you're right that there's sort of an uneasy tension about when you can raise recusal issues and when you have to waste post-judgment and all that. But let me give you a possibility of how this case might be resolved. And I think it's a difficult question for you, but I want to give you my thoughts. Generally speaking, we've held that a final judgment in an adversary proceeding relating to a bankruptcy matter is immediately appealable. Right, we have a number of cases that say that. One of them is a case called Diskowski versus Bronman Spirits from 1999. So when your client learns of the facts that you believe should have led to recusal and vacator, you file a Rule 60 motion, a Rule 60B motion with the bankruptcy court, right? The initial bankruptcy judge recuses, giving a different reason, but recuses, steps aside, goes on to a different bankruptcy judge. That bankruptcy judge, rightly or wrongly, denies the Rule 60B motion. When that Rule 60B motion is denied, isn't that the next end of the adversary proceeding, which required you to take up an appeal of the recusal denial at that time?
Well, in fact, we did take an appeal at that time.
An appeal to the district court?
Correct.
Or to hear?
Well, we tried to take an appeal to hear of a motion for stay pending review, and the court dismissed, saying it didn't have jurisdiction. So
What did you appeal to the district court?
We appealed the denial of the 60B motion. So
what happened there?
The district court affirmed.
And then was there an appeal from the district court to hear?
No. At that time, there was a resolution of the issues, and they were voluntarily dismissed.
What does that mean?
Well, that means that there was a settlement, and the case was dismissed. And after that, our client learned of additional issues that he wanted to raise
outside the adversary proceeding.
Outside the adversary proceeding, correct. And so,
unrelated to the recusal.
Well, some are related to the recusal, and some are related to the resolution. And so what we're asking is to be able to get back to the bankruptcy court and litigate these issues fresh.
But I'm sorry, go ahead. No.
So what orders outside the adversary proceeding? One of the difficulties here is that I can't tell what orders it is that
right,
you're
appealing. Okay.
And part of the difficulty, I think this may be a procedural difficulty for you, is that we've said in the bankruptcy context, you know, typically I think in the what I'll call the ordinary litigation context, you just get to file an appeal at the end and it like sucks up all of the interlocutory orders along the way.
Correct.
But in the bankruptcy context where finality is a little bit different and if something's final, you've got to appeal it immediately, we've imposed a requirement that you tell us in your notice of appeal, what orders are you appealing from? The only order that you say you're appealing from is this final case closing order. So what other orders are we talking about here?
Right.
What is it that you want to put before us?
Okay. You've raised a series of thorny issues, and so let me try to address them in series. First, the original request for recusal was not a 60B motion. It was a letter written by the principal of the client to the judge that was uploaded as a motion to recuse, and the judge then recused on different grounds than the grounds raised in the letter and made some statements which seemed disingenuous as more facts came out, placing a burden, we think, of disclosure on both the court and opposing counsel, both of whom failed to do so, and that's why we're seeking vacater now. It was after that we learned some of these facts, and so that's when we brought to be clear, counsel who had represented my clients throughout the proceedings withdrew between the time the letter was uploaded as a 60B motion and the time the court recused. Months later, I came in, filed the 60B motion. And that's when the court said, denied, no discovery, sit down, you know, this is offensive, and made all those comments that I think are something that this court needs to address.
Just so I'm clear, when you say the 60B motion, you mean the 60B motion that you were discussing with Judge Jordan inside
Correct.
The adversary proceeding?
Correct. Okay. Correct. So that was, well.
But see, that I take as a given all of your merits-based arguments about the recusal issue. And I assume, right. for purpose of our discussion, that was not handled correctly. I'll assume all of that. But wasn't there an obligation for you to appeal that Rule 60B denial, which included your request for vacater based on recusal-related issues?
Yes.
All the way up through here. And if you did not, why doesn't finality end this at that point in time, so that that recusal issue is not subsumed again within the final closing order of the bankruptcy proceeding?
Right, and that your question, Your Honor, and your question, Your Honor, are the crux of the procedural issue that I need to get over in order for this court to take a look at it. And I'm asking the court to get over it based upon the cases that I've cited where the 11th Circuit has said we're not taking up recusal until the case is finished.
I know, but in an adversary, right. the final judgment's appealable.
Correct. And we did.
We're not talking about resolved. We're not talking about the standalone recusal denial.
Right.
So if I take it as a given that if that adversary proceeding were still ongoing and you or your client had learned what he learned and moved to recuse the bankruptcy judge, and that bankruptcy judge had said, no, I'm not recusing, I agree with you. You could not take that up on appeal on an interlocutory basis at that time. But once that adversary proceeding ended with a final judgment, you then had to take that final judgment up, and if you wanted to address and challenged the denial of the recusal motion. And that's, I think, the same posture you're in here now based on the Rule 60B denial. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, actually what happened was the adversary proceeding was up on appeal at the time that the letter was sent to the court. And the court's recusal was the same day as the affirmance of that. So that order, that judgment in the adversary proceeding was affirmed by the district court and affirmed by this court before the 60B motion was brought.
Right, but then you had the 60B denial.
Right.
And so that's what may cause you some problems.
And the 60B, So the 60B needs to be considered in the context of the overall bankruptcy that was going on at that time, because it was we're talking about a parcel of real estate that was the subject of this essentially foreclosure proceeding. It was couched as a declaratory judgment to, you know, determine and enforce the lien, and so it came to the proceeding as a whole. So our position is that the entire record of the adversary proceeding was tainted, was unreliable, because the court made rulings in favor of the firm and the party which allowed the presentation at trial to be the presentation of the principal as he was at the time, and ignored anything that had happened before a fixed date. So my client didn't have the opportunity to put on the case that they wanted to put on, and the opposing party was able to look in a much more favorable light than he should have had all the evidence come out. So that went up on appeal on an unreliable record and was affirmed on an unreliable record. And then we brought the 60B motion in the context of the overall bankruptcy, trying to get a sale stopped, and we were shut down by the judge. We tried to take an appeal, and this court couldn't take jurisdiction. So those matters were resolved. That's another thing that we have to get over. And then subsequent to that resolution, additional facts were raised, which we want to raise with the bankruptcy court on remand to set that aside. But what our position is that because we were unable to appeal on a reliable record, went up forward on an unreliable record, and because we were unable to do any discovery or have any proceedings in front of the bankruptcy court, then we need to get in front of this court to get it vacated and sent back. And it wasn't until the case was final that, based upon the items that I cited, that this court could take jurisdiction. So now, a couple of years later, it's final.
We understand the argument. You've gone a little bit over your time, but you've saved your full 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Tabas.
Good morning, Judge. Joel Tabas of Tabas and Soloff, on behalf of Sunit Kapila, the Chapter 7 trustee. The final decree, which was appealed from, is merely a ministerial matter where the court acknowledges that everything in the bankruptcy proceedings have been complied with, and the court is closing the case. It's akin to a proceeding in district court where, after the judgment's entered, the court enters an order closing the case.
What do you think is available to an interested litigant in an appeal from that sort of an order is an argument that, for example, you shouldn't have closed a bankruptcy case because there were still some assets that were not administered. There were still some payments that hadn't been made. There were still some things going on that hadn't been finalized.
And that could be
properly appealed from that sort of a case closing order.
That's absolutely correct, Judge. Under Rule 3022, which governs final decrees, all that is done is the trustee is discharged because he's complied with all of his obligations, and the case is closed. That's all. It's not a prerequisite to other final orders in the proceeding being final. And
so help me out. I'm still trying to figure out like what orders it is that they think are tainted. Do you have a sense in your own mind for what orders it is that they're targeting, orders that exist? Are there orders that exist outside the adversary proceeding that they think are tainted and that they want to appeal? And if so, are those orders final such that they had to be appealed earlier?
The answer is I'm not sure what they believe they're doing. We did cite the Mondelli case, Your Honor, which was the only case we could find where any litigant had brought up an issue that the final decree was a necessary element to the finality of prior orders. And while I was preparing for oral argument, I went back and surveyed every case I could find in this district. Since the bankruptcy code was enacted almost 41 years ago, and the case law is legion with regards to the finality of a variety of orders.
But so you don't, I guess, deny the possibility that along the way, let's say there might be an order in the bankruptcy proceeding outside the adversary proceeding that I don't know my catalog of bankruptcy orders, but that isn't final, but that nonetheless they say is tainted. If there is a tainted, non-final, outside the adversary proceeding order, would that be appealable at the end?
No, Your Honor.
When would you appeal that one?
Those under the standards, under the bankruptcy code and this court's rulings, and I did research some additional case law, which I would like to cite today, and I provided to counsel earlier. And we have copies for the court. But there's one particular case, In re Martin, which is at 796 F. 2nd, 1435, where this court found the finality of bankruptcy court orders cannot be limited to the last order concluding the bankruptcy case as a whole. This circuit and others reviewing bankruptcy decisions have freely applied the collateral order doctrine and the Forgay-Conrad rule to such results. In that case, and in a few of the other cases I pulled, for instance, the court, the 11th Circuit, has ruled and held that stay relief orders, for instance, are final and appealable orders. So, for instance, with regards to Mr. Broeker and the appellant's complaints as to what happened in the adversary was validity, extent, priority of the lien. We were not involved. The trustee was not involved in this. It was between Mr. Broeker's client and a secured creditor. In that particular matter, there was an adversary. There were two appeals to this court, one on the merits, one on Rule 60B. I apologize. The second one did not make it up here. That was just the district court. And then there was a stay relief order, which allowed that particular secured creditor to go back to the state court and litigate more issues with regards to the validity and efficacy of the lien. That went up to the third DCA, and Mr. Broeker's client lost that. So they've gone up three times on appeal. These are not our issues, because the interesting thing, too, about finality is Mr. Broeker's client, the appellants herein, confirmed a plan of reorganization. The confirmation order is res judicata, collateral estoppel, and the conversion of this case to a Chapter 7 occurred after the confirmed plan. What a confirmed plan does under Chapter 11 is it revests all property of the Chapter 11 bankruptcy estate in the reorganized debtor, which was Mr. Broeker's client. Mr. Broeker's client used available funds from the Chapter 11 case to continue post-confirmation with litigation efforts against FACE, who has identified Mr. Gassenheimer's client, and others. They used up those monies. They had a great plan. It was a very favorable plan that Milland and Russin obtained for them. And it would have enabled them to continue making mortgage payments and doing a whole host of things while they continued to either market, liquidate, or sell the property. The problem they have, and this is also a final order, when this case was converted post-confirmation to a Chapter 7, this is clear, there's no dispute anywhere about this, there was no property of the Chapter 7 estate because all of the property had revested in the reorganized debtor by virtue of the confirmation order. So Judge Iskoff, before recusal, had found that there was no property of the estate. So the reason I bring that up is because Judge Gale below said there's no pecuniary interest that the debtor has in this particular estate. And without going through all the layers of claimants who would have to get paid before there was any pecuniary interest, no one had a pecuniary interest in the Chapter 7, which is the current proceeding, because the Chapter 7 estate never had any property, nor could it have any property. So we've been litigating some of these issues for six, seven years now, and I know.
But what was, in light of what you just explained, what was the adverse or adverse-like judgment against Mr. Broker's clients after the conversion to Chapter 7?
The court had, it was the
before recusal.
Yes, Judge, it was the adversary proceeding you were referring to, and if I may. The first, it was the adversary which determined the validity, extent, and priority of Mr. Gassenheimer's lien. That was appealed to the district court and affirmed, and was appealed to this court.
And affirmed.
And affirmed, and this court issued a written ruling affirming the case.
And then about 8 months after this court affirms that judgment in the adversary proceeding, that's when, on FACE's motion, Judge Isikoff converted the case to a Chapter 7 and appointed Mr. Kapila as a trustee.
Yes, right? I believe that's accurate.
So from that point on, what happens that is adverse from your perspective to Mr. Brokaw's clients? The judgment's already been issued.
Yes, Judge.
Obviously, there's a Rule 60B motion filed at some point, and that gets denied.
Yes.
Is there any other litigation besides that when that Rule 60B motion gets denied?
No, they took that up to district court, and as Mr. Broker said, there was a stipulated dismissal with prejudice, and that was the Rule 60B appeal. My understanding from Mr. Broker's papers is they just subsequently discovered another ground that they believed was a basis for recusal. And as pointed out by Judge Gale, they argued in the district court that they never brought that motion because they thought they were going to lose.
Could they still bring the motion? I mean, is there anything preventing them from bringing a Rule 60B now?
No. And Judge Gale said that. We said that. And we said that's the right procedure. If you think you've got sufficient grounds to bring another Rule 60B motion, you need to bring it before the bankruptcy court. They just skipped it. And I don't think there's a court in the country who's held that a final decree is necessary to make all the other orders in a case final. In fact, this court's held stay relief orders are final. It's held confirmation orders are final. Adversary judgments are final. And part of the reason I brought up the effect of confirmation with respect to property of the estate is there's no way to put Humpty Dumpty back together again here. There is no property over which the Chapter 7 trustee has jurisdiction. None. It's all been litigated. There's been stay relief granted. It was litigated again in state court. And there's just nothing that can be done in this estate. And the odd part of this particular appeal is most of what Mr. Broker and the appellants have complained of are matters with regards to the adversary proceeding and the specific creditor and Mr. Gassenheimer. I'm not Mr. Gassenheimer. I'm not Berger Singerman. I wasn't the lien claimant. I represent the Chapter 7 bankruptcy trustee.
Let me ask you just a quick question, and I'm sorry if this is like remedial appellate bankruptcy practice. It probably is. But just so I understand, I'm trying to think about like the quintessential non-final order. Maybe let's say like an order denying or compelling discovery, right?
Yes.
So if there is an order denying or compelling discovery outside the adversary proceeding that they say is tainted by bias, the reason the bankruptcy judge denied us discovery is because she plays tennis with plaintiff's counsel and hates us or whatever, then when is that appealable? That's not appealable immediately, is it?
No.
That would be appealable at the end?
No, the final decree is not relevant to that inquiry.
So when would that be appealable? When does the clock like begin to tick on that order?
Your Honor, it would depend whether or not it was done in conjunction with a contested matter. So in the main case, without an adversary, a motion can be brought up. It can be in contested matter. When that, say someone had objected to the claim of face, and it was an objection to claim, not an adversary proceeding. When the order was entered, allowing or disallowing the claim, that would be relevant, and that would be appealable, the discovery issue.
I see. So I see. So you wouldn't wait until the telltale end. You'd wait until the end of the contested claim piece of the proceeding.
That's correct, Judge.
Got it. Okay, very helpful.
That has to be final.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You wait until the next final order that pertains to the interlocutory order that you're concerned about.
Yes, which is exactly why I brought up the stay relief orders, because those are in the main case, and they basically divest the bankruptcy court of jurisdiction, so there's nothing left for the bankruptcy court to do with that particular matter. I did want to also point out one thing, which I think was not clear from appellant counsel's presentation. Judge Isikoff, my understanding is Judge Isikoff's recusal was not because a recusal motion was uploaded. She recused herself because Mr. Scudieri, who's one of the appellants herein, hand-delivered that particular letter and left it in the mailbox at her residence. That was why she recused herself, not because of the merit of anything in the letter or anything else. She felt that she could not be impartial after he found out where she lived and left the letter at her home. Your Honors, if there's no other questions, I finished.
Justice Tavis, thank you very much.
Yes, Judge.
All right, thank you. Let me start where we left off. As demonstrated in our later motions in the district court, it was clear and a matter of public record where this judge lived, because that was the registered address of the foundation where she had all of the galas every year, where donors, including the senior partner of the firm that represented FACE, were there. And so we feel that that was a pretext to say, well, here's a way to make the date for my recusal as of a recent date and not go back to the undisclosed facts at the beginning.
For purposes of our jurisdictional discussion, I accept all of that.
Right.
But you litigated that, or you had the opportunity to litigate that before Judge Mark. You think he improperly curtailed the proceeding, didn't give you discovery, shut it down, told you to sit down.
Right.
You appealed that to the district court. And then at some point thereafter, there's a dismissal because there's a settlement. Why isn't that? If you're alleging error in the denial of the motion to recuse under Rule 60B, that dismissal ends it all.
Right.
Right? Why isn't that fatal to your being here now?
Okay. Let me say a couple things and then get to the question. First, we're not litigating the a denial of recusal. We're litigating the...
What are you challenging?
We're challenging the failure to disclose at the inception of the case the relationships with counsel.
But that was... I'm sorry to interrupt, but that was part of your Rule 60B motion.
Some of it was, some of it was not. The foundation issue was not learned of until later.
So why isn't the answer that you can file a Rule 60B motion with anything you've learned after that?
I mean, that's one of the things I'm hearing now, and I accept that. So let me put that aside and just say we're here now, and based upon everything that has gone on in this case and other cases, and I'd point the court to the recent decisions in In re Trafford Liberty Properties versus Kapila, and in re Trafford Richard Clark versus Kapila, decisions issued by Judge Altanaga on August 9th and Judge Moreno on September 9th. And in Judge Moreno's opinion, He goes back to the congressional record and concerns about the bankruptcy practice being a club as perceived by people who are not regular practitioners in the bankruptcy court, and the need to get disclosures either at the beginning of the case, which is what the situation was here, or in the middle of the case when something happens, as is what happened in the Trafford case. So how do we get here? We get here because the issues could not be brought before this court until the case was final, as demonstrated by this court's dismissal of the Talarchik appeal, which was from the Sanders order. It was one of the cases that counsel gave me this morning.
But let me make sure. In 2015, when you discovered additional evidence that you thought suggested that there was some recusal issues or the need for recusal, at that point in time, you could have either filed a new 60B motion, or could you not have asked for a reconsideration of the previous denial of your 60B motion, your initial 60B, based upon the new evidence? Would that not have been a procedural tool you could have used?
You've gotten to the heart of our conundrum.
But at that but at that point, if your reconsideration motion or your new 60B had been denied, that would have been the ability to get here, right? That would have been your tick or your key through the door to get to this court.
I don't believe so, because I believe that under the law that this court has established, we can't get to this court until the final dismissal has been entered. So we were under a conundrum.
Final dismissal of what?
The final order resolving the case, the one that we appealed from. So the case was closed, the order closing the case. And so we had a conundrum of, do we go back for another 60B motion in front of the judge that told us, just sit down, no discovery, this is offensive, or do we wait for that final order closing the case so that we can get to the 11th Circuit on what we have? And so what we've done is we've waited until that final order to get to this court so that we can ask this court to take a look at these issues and give us some relief. Now, I hear that perhaps this court looks at it as we should have brought another 60B motion, and certainly that's what Judge Gale said in the district court. But we wanted to get past the district court and get before this court with these facts, with these issues, and do it at a time when we were confident that this court would have jurisdiction based upon the finality of the proceedings below.
All right, Mr. Broeker, thank you very much. Ms. Tatum, thank you very much. We appreciate it.